Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
I like your style there.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's branding.
It's a good word.
Yeah. Well, it's been, what'd you say, 9 days?
I think 9 days, and we've heard you. We've heard the word more, and I would caution you, not with the intent to rhyme, be careful what you wish for.
Well done. Yeah, be careful what you wish for. Well,
we're happy to deliver it, though.
Definitely a possibility in around 4 months' time, with a lot more stuff. I hate doing those projections out, but school.
Yeah, but we're going to make the return to video, YouTube. We do promise that.
Yeah, it has certainly been school. Grad school has been an absolute time suck, which it is for anybody. So, I'm looking forward to the space here to be able to bring that YouTube content. I mean, really, it's quite easy. We could literally start doing it today if we really wanted to, but it is an extra piece in terms of editing and stuff like that, and I'd rather make it look good, than not. So
what I foresee, I mean, at the risk of spitballing private enterprise business here publicly, is perhaps we continue with the audio being conducted and Colorado, and the video being recorded and uploaded in the DC Metro.
Quite possibly, yeah. And at this point, we're bringing, we'll be, if you will, resurrecting YouTube. So if there are any listeners out there that would like, if there's a consensus in terms of a platform or what you'd like to see in the videos, do you want to see the full-length podcasts? Do you want to see snippets? Do you want to see any kind of behind the scenes, because there's certainly a lot of stuff that goes into this prior to even an episode being aired. So, we're open to comments, but
the precast stuff would sometimes be interesting. I mean,
yeah, we're definitely looking at some format for some bonus episode stuff coming up, and that would be a lot of the quote unquote unrecorded or rather unaired segments that you would obviously not hear. So
I have a question, though.
I have an answer.
Let's see if they match. Will you continue to wear a plaid shirt, and will I continue to wear a shirt and tie?
It's a good question.
Maybe we'll flip it.
To be determined. Yeah. I could maybe dress up. We'll see. Maybe a Hawaiian shirt.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
All right. With that, a few things going on right now, aren't they?
Yes, there are. And before we jump into all of that, as always, thank you for your continued listenership. And we appreciate the broad reach internationally and, of course, domestically as well. There has never been a more interesting time than today, right? So we are appreciative of your listenership, and as always, head over to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces. And
hopefully you like those.
I certainly enjoy reading them, and as always, everything is a work in progress. Everything we do for the discourse and for to bring that civil conversation, and that's what we do here. As always, we don't always agree, and a lot of the time we do agree. But what we'd like to show is that we can have disagreements without being so incredibly, incredibly divisive, if you will, if that's such a word.
That's a good word. Most Americans pronounce it divisive, but I think you went the UK route, and divisive. That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you think? He's going to listen to this, and that's quite all right. What did you think of my brother's debut, editorially speaking?
I thought it was very strong. I obviously would not would not say it was a piece of shit on the podcast episode, but I don't believe that in real life. So I think it's a good view to have. I think often on the podcast you really see, unless we're getting down to the nuts and bolts of philosophy, you really hear a fairly center left and center right viewpoint, and so his viewpoint is well received, and I hope that soon we can get him on the podcast and have a conversation.
I think he's down for that. I just you and I will have to make sure you're down for that.
I see. Well,
he doesn't hold back.
That's okay. I mean,
he did well there. I'm sure there's folks that read that and they think, you know, he's not down with a cause, but I would urge them to reread that because I didn't take that. He urged me via text before publication, please don't take this that I'm against the idea of civil rights. And this is someone who, folks that don't know him, you know, I'm his younger brother by 12 years, and he's actually got his bachelor's in criminal justice, went to law school, and is very much against things that cause recidivism. And I mean, that's a plethora of items, but I didn't take it that he was against the idea of the progression of civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you perceive that?
No, not at all. And, you know, I hate to say, it's tough when you have to read between the lines on an ideology. And I'm very aware of the libertarian ideology, and there's a lot of it that I agree with. And then there's a pretty important chunk that I have not necessarily a problem with, but so it isn't a problem with that ideology. It's an execution problem with the ideology. And that's where I sort of part ways with the libertarian viewpoint. So
let's get real, Nate. You are more invested in the idea of an expanded social state. Libertarians by definition
do not. Yes. And to be honest, you know, we can, obviously we're almost 10 minutes in and having a libertarian versus not, but I guess my point is it isn't that I want an expanded social safety net. I think if there was a way to do it, yeah, no, I realize that, but if we could conceivably make it work like the libertarian think that it could work without it just utterly destroying millions of people's lives, I'd be completely on board with it. But I just don't. It's a wonderful theory.
I don't know how pragmatic it is now.
It's just not super pragmatic. So, but it's fun to talk about. Yes, with that.
That's the gauntlet to my big brother. I'm sure he's going to hear that and be like, "All right, yes, I'm ready now." And let's should be interesting.
Yeah, and again, I'm more interested in hearing quite frankly, I'm more interested in hearing a libertarian explain how it would work than I do enjoy debating libertarians. It's sort of like I really enjoy debating theologians. I think it's I enjoy it. I don't necessarily enjoy debating libertarians because I haven't heard a libertarian give a really good argument on how all their stuff's going to work. So I'd love to talk to them.
That's a separate episode. I mean,
indeed.
On the fiscal side, I can extrapolate, but
yeah. Anyway, what is the point of today's episode? And, you know, a lot more of the same, more Trump rally or whatever you want to call it. I don't know, fan gathering. Over the weekend, we had 4th of July here in the United States, a really sort of more somber 4th of July, if you will, with COVID and whatnot. And of course, everything else that's been going on. And it led me to ask you, what should we be talking about? And it quickly became apparent that what will be interesting, not necessarily for November 2020, but beyond November 2020, is the GOP brand. And that would be the conservative brand here in the United States, not necessarily the libertarian brand, but like wholesale Mitch McConnell.
Libertarians have no brand.
No, they do not. I mean, just wholesale Mitch McConnell type conservative or insert any other senator, congressman, that brand versus
the Trump.
Versus the Trump brand.
Right.
And because for the longest time, well, really preceding his victory in 2017, it was the Trump brand versus the GOP brand. And there was no way that Trump was going to hijack and become the GOP, become that the GOP would be the party of Trump. And lo and behold, it happened. And it's very, you can definitely see the shift. You can look at someone like Lindsey Graham, who thought it would be the end of the world if the president, well, now president, was elected. And then, of course, he became his biggest butt or best friend. So,
talk about a slip of the tongue.
Yeah, gosh, what did I? Wow.
Wowzers.
But you saw that progression, and that happened with a lot of people, and very quickly, the GOP became the party of Trump. And now, moving towards the 2020 election, which is only 4 months away, the question is there a necessity or is there an urgency within the GOP, the Conservative Party, to take back the GOP brand and distance themselves from Trump? And I don't know how many months ago it was. I think it was right around the beginning of the year. I had made a point, and I'll toot my own horn, that I said I wondered if there would be a point that conservatives would splinter from Trump. Like, there would be enough stuff that he would do that they would feel it necessary, or they might feel it an opportune time.
The last mean thing he'd say that would break the camel's back.
Maybe, yeah. And what
do you think? It's that simple?
I think it could be that simple. I think that in this, the reason I said I wonder what that would look like, and I feel like it might happen, is because I certainly didn't predict COVID happening, and I certainly didn't predict the fallout, and quite frankly, the positive fallout of from COVID being that of a greater. A greater understanding of like the Black Lives Matter movement and the push for equality and social justice reform, or the criminal justice reform, but really just
I'm not sure how you conflate those two things, but do continue.
Yeah, so I certainly didn't predict those, but these are the two things that validate my point that there could very well be something, meaning that I didn't think Trump, in terms of his leadership, was strong enough that if something like this came along, that he'd be able to keep it together for a re-election. And the reason I picked Joe Biden earlier was because I just didn't see something of the severity that we're seeing now actually happening. However, so I guess what I should say is my prediction was that if something came up, Trump would not be able to keep it together, and it would give GOP leaders an opportunity to splinter from Trump and retake the GOP brand. And I think
let me pause you there. And I don't mean this. Please don't take this that I'm trying to interrupt your train of thought. But something we did touch on briefly precast, and I kind of want to draw it out now, is if the president is this weak, is why is Vice President Biden still hiding in his basement? Why is he not coming out and campaigning? It can't be as simple. I mean, he could wear a mask and at rallies, couldn't he?
Well, he could. The point is, and I almost feel like this is a rhetorical question, but not necessarily to people. Well, some people,
because
listening,
you told me an answer doesn't mean you told our audience an answer.
He doesn't have to. He literally does not have to.
So he's letting the president hang himself.
All he has to do. Now, the president doesn't feel like he's shooting himself in the foot or hanging himself. However, what Biden's doing is reading the room. And the president of the United States is just reading part of the room. He's reading the safe, comfortable part of the room that he keeps returning to. And if the president feels as though his almost hyper, hyper is not the right word, but his return to the 2016 campaign trail with sort of a ratcheted up philosophy and idea is going to win then let him, and Joe Biden doesn't have to do a thing. All he needs to do is not say anything stupid, wear a mask, keep talking about
what you want to vote for.
I don't need, quite frankly, I don't, and the rest of the United States doesn't need Joe Biden to go out and talk about what he's going to do as president. The guy's been in politics for decades. He's been the vice president under Barack Obama, an African-American president that was younger than him. Has he said stupid shit in the past? Has he taken the wrong stance on certain things? Absolutely.
Well, he doesn't know what state he's in half the time.
All I'm saying is that Joe Biden doesn't need to go out and campaign to show us what kind of president he's going to be, because he has that long of a track record. He was in the White House for 8 years. He was in that administration. He doesn't need to prove anything. So
let me ask, and this is not.
And I don't. And let's just be clear before you answer the question. That doesn't mean that I support him. It doesn't mean that I think he's going to be the greatest president. I just know that the reason he doesn't have to do anything is because we don't need to see what Joe Biden is going to be. We don't need. It's not necessary. And so if he doesn't need to do that, he just needs to let Trump do what Trump is doing.
From a political operative perspective, I mean, obviously, I agree with you that the last that the vice president says, Vice President Biden says, from a just strictly tactical standpoint, yes, absolutely. But I mean, as a voter, are you really comfortable with Susan Rice being in the inner circle? The same Susan Rice that met on the tarmac with former President Clinton, that a Republican, let's be real, could never have gotten away with.
Yeah,
I
mean,
that?
What I'll be honest with you about right now is that I just, at this point,
the end justifies the means.
The job that the current president of the United States is doing for our international allied relationships, the bullshit he's peddling in terms of ratcheting up the racism and the gaslighting, I don't really need to go into the whataboutisms. If it means that we can have some normalcy back in Washington, I think I'm pretty happy with that right now.
I don't mean this as adversarial, Nate, but
no, absolutely not. Does it make me comfortable? It doesn't make me super comfortable.
Doesn't that basically get us back to an extreme form of rhetoric, only on the other side, that perhaps a different element of the country is comfortable with? I mean, again, it comes back to this, the end justifies the means. I agree with this quote, so I'm okay with this sort of ratcheting of the rhetoric.
Well, I think where it boils down to is, you know, and we'll definitely get back to the sort of GOP branding here, even though this is definitely part of it, is...
No, I don't mean to get off that issue, but I mean, this is important.
It is. I think at this point,
I mean, a leader is known. You and I are known by the kinds of friends we choose.
Sure.
A leader is known by the types of people they have around them.
Yes.
Okay. Just like I wasn't comfortable with Louis Farrakhan being in Barack Obama's inner circle, I'm also not comfortable with Susan Rice being in Vice President Biden's inner circle, just because one of us, both of us, agree with the civil rights cause. Does the end justify the means? Does whatever is on the other side, is that justifiable because one of us opposes Donald Trump?
So here's how I would counter that. I am more comfortable with Joe Biden, with Susan Rice and Joe Biden's inner circle, than I am with Stephen Miller in Trump's circle.
That's an honest answer, and I can at least I can say that's a straightforward answer. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot like that does need to get expounded upon, because I can't help but feel that Vice President Biden is getting a free pass from the mainstream media.
And I hear you loud and clear. And that would be, it's the simplest answer to that question.
Okay.
Is that it? Yeah.
I know that's not the topic you chose for tonight.
No. And I think these are the type of things that are going to come out as we get closer to election. And I think it's important to answer those questions. Like, do I like that happened? I think we did an episode, or at least talked about it. And it certainly is not comfortable at all. However, I'm not
Trump's defense lawyer here, but I feel compelled to stress that point, though, that it feels like Animal Farm. It feels a bit Orwellian here, that once we get rid of one group, so the other side is just going to be comfortable with another group of political thugs.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people are pining for is whether you want to call it one group.
Barack Obama to be back.
I mean, there's, again, it's, we can always point to things in people's presidencies that the people they associated with that.
That was not a slight on President Obama.
No,
I think that's what a lot of people would wish for is a return to that. But
look, if people are, even if they just aren't political, the fact that
they want truth.
The fact that there was someone in the White House that could be an example to people, that could lead the country in a presidential way and inspire people, was enough for a lot of folks.
So we felt better about cloakroom deals.
Yeah, I mean, I would say
I'm not saying that to be contrary.
No. I don't have much to say to that.
I know this is way off topic.
Yeah, no, I really don't. It isn't that. I just think what is happening here is a lot of whataboutisms, or saying that what is the lesser of the two evils here, and you know that comes down to a preference, right? That comes down to, I guess, what cult of personality you like, or whatever the deal is. And I think what a lot of people are craving for is a leader who isn't allowing a portion of society to act on their worst impulses. And I don't mean their worst impulses like murdering and like the purge, but I mean those impulses that I think were largely checked, those that outward I don't want to say racism, but there's certainly these things are rearing their heads in. And I think that's what a lot of people are pining for, is a leader that won't, as certainly through an example of himself or herself, wouldn't allow that type of that, at least that type of action to take place through their example. And I think that's ultimately what a lot of people are hoping for right now.
Well, I don't mean to at all hammer that home and put anybody on the spot here. My feeling there was, I will say I feel that perhaps at times, I don't want to say that we've been unduly, or either of us has been unduly harsh on the president, but I would say that there's been a bit of we've forgotten what happened under the previous administration. And I don't know about you, but I'm not particularly proud of the job that Secretary Clinton did. And I'm particularly happy with the fact that she is not our president. Now, I'm sure that the 70% of our audience that is left of center disagrees with me ardently there. But I'm not comfortable with someone that says they did nothing wrong destroying servers and iPhones. So well, I know that's going back to a Trey Gowdy direction.
And listen, here's and I don't mean to cut you off, but the silver lining of for those left of center folks that, you know, maybe would say, look, I'm not so sure I agree with you on that.
I'm sure they're hating what I know.
I would say
right now.
I would say to them that maybe in the future we can look back at the presidency of Donald Trump as it, with a huge silver lining, that if Hillary had been the president, we wouldn't have this sort of cult of personality that really jump-started a movement to broad social justice reform. And there, it very well could be that, look, we needed 4 years to figure out where everyone stood, because everything was real great, and we needed to figure out where everyone stood so that we could move forward. And that's what Donald Trump did
for
us.
And I know that's not where you're going with this. I don't hold the economic downturn, which is due to the coronavirus, I don't hold either of those two items against the president. But I will agree with you on this, in the sense that I feel a lot more people are involved and paying attention to politics now, and are at least coming of age and caring about an idea of what they want from leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think with Hillary Clinton we would have seen that. And I'm not saying that there wouldn't have been horrific things that would have happened, but
we'd be involved in more wars. That's for certain.
Sure.
She's a hawk.
Sure. But I don't know that we would have seen the same excitement in terms of individuals and almost like a survival for people to quickly understand how the hell our government works.
Well, it's certain to feed into your original proposed topic, and I do apologize for getting us off on that. I felt compelled to represent that, and I feel like that I haven't brought that to the table as far as an examination in recent history to the podcast. But it does kind of feed into what you wanted as an original topic, what we both agreed to, and that is we would not be at this moment, indisputably, as far as the crisis of conscience the GOP is having right now, in that the Republican Party is looking at one way or the other. Win, lose, or go home, there will be life after Donald Trump. And what does that look like?
Yeah, and it is an interesting crossroads, right? So again, getting back to what I had predicted, now, where is the out, right? And how long does the Trump brand stay attached to the GOP? And
well, remember one of the things, and I know you're sitting here going, this is not exactly what we discussed, but remember, we had a police reform bill that was proposed by the lone black senator in the GOP, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, and I'm not going to be convinced. That was it, Senator Durbin, who said this is a token proposal. You're not going to convince me in this day and age that he did not know the token is the lone black character on South Park. Okay, that was a racially charged statement to make, and so that's where we are today. And Senator Scott is not returning to the Senate, but that's where we are now. In the GOP, it's being painted as though it's a bunch of people in hoods, white sheets. Do you think that's accurate?
It's a good question. I think that there certainly is a faction of our society, and probably more now than it certainly has been, and even in the last several months, where people that tend to agree more with that faction that I wouldn't say necessarily that they're with hoods like what you're suggesting in terms of white supremacy, but
so do you think that Senator Tim Scott, do you feel like, let me be very careful how I phrase this, do you feel like he is kind of inverse pandering, that he's working for a messenger? Do you think it doesn't mean what he says in proposing the police reform bill? Because, I mean, here's where we're at with that, is that the GOP Senate, GOP-controlled Senate, and the Democratic-held House, they're not even going to work together regardless on any kind of police reform bill.
Yeah, I guess my question is, whether it's the quote-unquote token black guy, the point is, so if you want to say, is it really these guys in white hoods? Well, if it's the lone black guy that's making the police reform bill, and him only, and none of the other white guys are stepping up, then it does look that way. I'm not saying that they're burning crosses kind of thing, but it certainly shows a level of apathy. And it's, look, I mean, that's all that a lot of people are asking right now, is that there's just some more accountability. And it's certainly that apathy speaks volumes to a lot of people in America. And that's coming back to the branding, right? It's what side of history in 20 years, 30 years from now, when we look back like we do in 1968, 1970, those years, how will you be viewed? How will your time in leadership look, when we will arguably be more progressive than we are now, whether that's as simple as maybe universal health care or legalization of marijuana and decriminalization of things like psilocybin and the expungement of nonviolent drug offenses. Like, even just those little things would make a massive difference for a lot of people. So if
and well, I gets away from the issue of why not even hear Senator Scott's proposal, because I mean, I'm assuming you don't want to give the lone black senator a win, black Republican senator a win there.
So your question is why not hear it?
Why not even debate the issue? I know that's what we're getting at here is the soul of the GOP and the where to now element of this.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to think about that one. And I don't mean that in terms of in a broad sense of where we're at. I mean that
I know that's a bit of a fringe question. We've gotten way off topic here
it's a good one. And I'm sure there's more political forces there that I'm missing or I need to go and look at to make more sense of the entire thing. But you know, I personally feel like it speaks more volumes than for the fact that there wasn't more of an effort by those leaders to in the GOP to try to make a move and read the room and realize that this is happening. This movement for equality is happening. And
so what do you read into things like the Senate Majority Leader has said, where Senator Mitch McConnell has said that, you know, basically preparing folks for the end of the majority?
Well, I think there's a number of ways to look at it. The first would be that if you're looking at it from a brand perspective, that it might be that 2020, 2022 into 2024 is a rebranding era. And there would be a move to, so don't worry about the losses. Don't worry. I mean, you have to worry, but they've done a pretty good job of stacking the Supreme Court and stacking the judicial system. So there were some huge wins that McConnell had there. So, you know, it could be that we're not looking for massive losses here, but we should be prepared and don't leave with our tail between our legs, but take this as an opportunity to take our to regroup. And look, that's what parties have to do from time to time. You have to take the loss and regroup. It's not the end of the world. Although for a lot of people, it is the end of the world. But I think that's one way to look at it. I think also the reality is the more that the president gaslights and just digs his hole, they're realizing that this isn't the mountain or the hill that they want to die on, and that we should just be prepared. We're being outspent. We're being out-campaigned. We've got the Lincoln Project working against the president of the United States. If the president loses, we will lose some key seats. And it's
the party will survive. I don't know if Senator Cory Gardner's career will, but
he'll be fine.
A bit of a thought to add a bit of a layer to this, because they, believe it or not, do exist. It's a bit rhetorical, I suppose, but you do know that there are, for instance, black conservatives, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you think that they land on this? I mean, do you think that they at all have a role to play in this rebranding? Do you think they'll forget the token comments? Not from you, but from the Democratic politicians in D.C.? How do you think that will impact? I mean, because they're not just lockstep with the Democratic Party any more than whites are with the Republican Party.
So here's the thing, John. I don't think it is about the existing black conservatives. I don't think what it is in terms of branding is how to create a party that is more welcoming to the African American community, that isn't so, that the theories aren't so sterile. Like, listen, we can help the black community by economic theory 1, 2, and 3. Like, it doesn't work that way. That's not going to be the way to the hearts of the African-American community, where it's like, listen, here's how the pick yourself up by your bootstraps mentality works with disadvantages community and off the welfare state and blah, blah, blah. That it just doesn't ring true.
Do you think that they want to be told?
About what?
How they need to be helped?
Well, I don't, right now, I don't think it's about how they should be helped. It's about, if you really do care about us, here's what we need. And it isn't about welfare. It isn't about handouts.
But that means that Washington is supplying their needs, is what I'm getting at.
No, it's Washington can make changes to the laws that are in place or make the inequities from that minority community make or equal the standard of the white community. Or the more affluent.
I guess
community.
This is what I'm getting at. I promise. I swear to you. I know you're probably not very happy with me right now, and I understand that because I've taken us on tangent several times. But I guess what I'm getting at here is that I'm not so sure that they believe that Washington has any answers for them, and B, I'm not so sure that really any political thinkers actually believe they have any answers for them, and. Lastly, certainly not least, that they want answers from politicians. Is there a policy answer that's going to resolve 4+ centuries of inequity?
Well, it isn't. I'm making wild assumptions about an entire community of people,
Maybe I'm all wet here.
No, it's. It isn't, when we're talking about being a more, what it is trying to make in the necessity, if they want to have any long-term survival, because parties do change, and it's not, it certainly doesn't necessarily happen over 4 years, but they certainly do change and morph. The thing that the conservative party needs to do is learn to be a more inclusive party. And that is one thing that they fail to do. And all you have to do is look at an intern photo from one president to the next. So from Obama to President Trump. The inclusivity, if you will, is not equal. And that is what the GOP needs to do. Is to learn to be more inclusive. And it isn't that you're going to be more inclusive by creating law. That's not, there's a lot of law in place. We've had laws from the 60s. We've just had an interpretation of the law at the Supreme Court that went in favor of more left-leaning individuals. It is cultural.
That was kind of what I was getting at.
It's cultural changes that need to take place. And often that starts with leadership, and that is a change that happens at the leadership level, and that's what the GOP needs to do if they want to bring in those the conservative Hispanic community or the conservative African American community or the conservative anything else. But as long as there is an association of anti-immigration and law and order that's coming from that platform, that will be enough to keep those communities away and will continue to make the GOP look like a good old boys club. You know what? A good old white boys club. And that's it. It's simple. It is very simple. It isn't about, because the bootstrap mentality is fine. It's absolutely fine. I think anyone on planet Earth agrees that hard work and a good work ethic is a wonderful characteristic to have, and we would instill that in any child we had, to have that hard work ethic.
But, I would hope so.
But where that work ethic or where that idea falls short is the equality of opportunity. And as long as the GOP is aligned or is at minimum associated with the idea and I wouldn't say it's necessarily that they want that associate or they're creating that association, but as long as they're associated with the party that doesn't give a shit about you unless it's me.
You are aware that Richard Nixon is the first president that implemented affirmative action, yes?
Yep, but that's Richard Nixon. And that was a long time ago. And that's great.
Last I checked, all he's associated with is Watergate.
That's true. And I'm here to say that he did some great stuff. And I'm not saying that all conservative presidents are that way. I'm talking about a party. I'm talking about a brand.
And you're right. And I can't help but come back to this. And this is not painted towards you. I know. Look, I can't help but come back to this point of how did they know what they want?
How do they know what they want? Well, a good benchmark would be the Constitution. A good benchmark would be the Bill of Rights. And I think that's what every American is allowed. And so it isn't so much what they want. And I will say that if there is to be disenfranchised, to be over-policed, to be underrepresented gives you a really good idea of what you do want. And that is representation. And that is an equality of policing. And that is an equality of opportunity. And it doesn't have to be super complex. All it has to be is a complete equal and opposite reaction to the way your life is every single day. And I think I truly believe that that's just what people want and what people are crying out for right now. And I think the GOP has an incredible opportunity. They really do. They have a huge opportunity.
Look, and I guess what I'm struggling with, and this is kind of you and I bouncing the ball back and forth, I know, and this is what's being dug lately. We keep getting that word right more. And look, folks, let the hate comments come in. I've never ducked them. All right. But anybody who knows me knows where I'm coming from here. And I think you do too as well, Nate, or otherwise sure. You wouldn't keep having me on here. But I guess what I keep coming back to is how do all the white people I see talking know what the black community wants? Because I've never been called a racist by the black community, by black individuals, because that's really what these policies come down to, is how they impact individual lives. What I keep seeing are, what I keep reading are individuals that white, saying that I, by arguing for not being dependent upon the state, am a racist.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, how do you boil that down?
So this is... And this is, I think, for an entire different episode, because there is, I want to make two points. The first point is, I'll start with the one that's less popular, and then with the one that's more popular.
That's on me.
No, that's fine. I'll start with the least popular point, and that there is. Whether I don't care who you are, I don't care. I don't care, and I'll say it, is that there is a cancel culture. There is, and there will always be these type of cultures within the broad culture of the United States or culture of the world, and I understand that there it becomes really difficult for someone like, and don't this isn't wrong, but you or me for that matter. To acknowledge my racism, for that I would ask the question: What do you actually mean by that? I need some clarification because I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that.
For me?
No, not you. I mean, just as a question broadly, that you know that it's the cancel culture will say like by your whiteness you are inherently racist. You have to acknowledge that racism, to which I would say I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that. And so what I acknowledge is that there is a culture there that does that type of thing. Now, my second point is to what you had said. You had posited the question or the comment that said, how do we know, or how is it that white people know what, you know, minority communities want.
That was a broad.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
That wasn't aimed at any
individual. No. And I realize that. But what I mean, what my response to that is, you're right. For a long time, up until just recently, and George Floyd was the catalyst for this, that all of a sudden I think a lot of white people realized that we just need to shut up. That we actually don't know, and it's our time to actually shut up. And I don't think that we do it particularly well still, but I think it's been a realization very recently where there's been a shift that says, you know what, I'm just going to step back on this one. Where do you need me? What do you need me to do? And that has been, if you look closely, that is happening more than it has before. And I think at least, and I don't know where to go with that in terms of GOP branding or Democratic branding or whatever the deal is.
No, I know. I really derailed this.
I wouldn't call it a derailment. I think it's our podcast and we can talk about whatever we want, even if we say it's going to be one thing at the beginning.
You're the host of it, and I apologize.
No, look, believe it or not, 3 hours ago, I didn't know what we were going to talk about.
Well, so I think perhaps GOP branding should be one that we actually focus on.
We certainly talked about it. And I think,
we didn't dig as deep as we wanted, and that's on me.
And that's fine. I think these conversations are far more thought-provoking than whether or not Mitt Romney's going to make another run for the presidency in 15 years.
That's a good episode in and of itself.
But no, look, I think. I'll be honest with you, because of everything that is happening, this is the most we have been, at least.
It's the most we've dug into race, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not saying that we were dying to do it, or it's something that is quite an interesting topic as to white guys. It's an interesting topic to talk about because there's a lot that the lived experiences that we have are not representative of the struggle of a lot of people. And
no, but at the same time, like you mentioned earlier about cancel culture, it is kind of ridiculous, the idea that, okay, white people need to shut up, but at the same time you hear, well, white people, you need to fix the problem. Well, it doesn't work that way, honey baby.
Yeah, except for...
So this is what we have to do to fix this, except what we're doing right now.
Except for when the majority of people in power, at least at the federal government level, are white.
That's not you and I.
That is not you and I. No, you're absolutely
that's
right.
What I mean, that's what I was getting at earlier when this comes down to, well, you know, it's like when South Park, again, I hate to return to that, but when Token said, look, Jesse Jackson is not the emperor of black people. It's not a monolith. Those are individuals.
Yeah.
Same thing in the white community. You and I know this. I came up in the Gulf South. New Orleans, your family are largely from Detroit. We came up around the African-American community, and it's not like everybody in our respective families votes as a block. They're human beings with their individual feelings, and that impacts how people vote and their thusly policies. So that's the trouble when you get into, and not you, but the royal you gets into identity politics, is we're talking about these things like it's a game of Risk.
Mm.
We're talking about things that impact individuals' lives. And those are the people that do the living and dying in this country and paying for all the programs and wars we talk about. So I think that's,
Well, you know,
as much as I hate derailing this episode, at the same time, I'm kind of glad we're able to do this because,
I agree with you. Look, I think that in a perfect world, left or right, we wouldn't be spending money on programs to build people up because we wouldn't need to. And there's a difference. There's a difference between needing to, or just not wanting to, even though there's a need, and without having solutions in place, right? So, like, for example, you would say, Nate, you like, and I'm not saying you say this, but Nate, you are in favor of an expanded welfare state. And I would say, you know what? Right now, I am. It doesn't mean that I think we should do it forever, but I think there's a need for it right now. Is it something that I want as a solution? No. It's because right now there's too many underlying cultural problems that start as high up in the federal government level to criminal justice, to policing, to education reform, to a number of things that need to be fixed. And once those are fixed, and we have a period of time where these things take have an ability to flesh out and have an ability to build the communities back up that are disenfranchised, then we won't need it. The other side of that is, hey, Nate, I heard that you don't want anymore. We need to cut welfare. We need to cut the welfare state. And I would say...
Well, that would be taking what you said vastly, grossly out of context.
Well, I mean, no, but I'm saying, let's hypothetically say I was in favor of taking away a welfare state. The way it looks right now is that there is no solution other than, so we take away the welfare state. Let's take it away. Let's cut it. Cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut free lunch, cut all this stuff. Let's save money. Okay. So then what you're saying is your theory of picking yourself up by your bootstraps is somehow just going to work by taking all that stuff away. It's going to incentivize people to work harder. People are working really fucking hard right now. And as if taking
Americans
away...
Americans work harder than any country in the world.
Taking
we
away...
We work longer hours than any people on the planet.
And for not a lot of money either. And so the difference is, yeah, I am for that welfare state because right now people can't survive. And they can't survive economically. They can't survive culturally because they're over-policed or they're undereducated. And I mean that in terms of the education system's poor. The advantages of getting into universities to help that leverage for a better career don't exist. So you think that taking something that's there away, that is this massive incentive that all of a sudden they're like, well, you know what? Let me pick up that third job and just, I'll, you know, that how I, you're right. Without unemployment or without those, the subsidies to be able to feed my kids, I'll just pick up that, with all that extra time, I'll pick up that third job and I'll just pick myself up by my bootstraps. You know what? Thanks, GOP. You guys really incentivized me to work harder, to pick myself up by my bootstraps. It doesn't work that way. And that's the way it looks right now in terms of that GOP brand, right? Where it's like, yeah, you're right. I think we do need universal health care because people are going bankrupt because they can't pay for their medical bills. Like, you know what? I do think we need to increase the assistance to single mothers so that they can feed their kids nutritious food. It's like, yes, that's what we, as opposed to
Americans feed their kids nutritious food.
As opposed to,
give me a break.
As opposed to, no, let's take it away. And it'll fit, the problem will fix itself. And I think there's just, it's an insane reality. It's an absolutely insane reality.
So so we're worried about the cruise liners.
And more Americans are realizing that idea is insane. It's an insane proposition.
Do you think Mitt Romney grasps this point?
What about Mitt Romney?
Do you think that Senator Romney grasps or has begun to grasp this point?
Well, the question is not so much, yes, he grasps it, 100%. The real question is how genuinely he grasps it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Do you, okay, of course, yeah, there's a difference in academically believing something, and like there's a difference in academically believing in laissez-faire policy and in saying pragmatically that that's what we need right now. And that's the thing. I'm a pragmatic idealist. I have my ideals, but we also need everyday ways to implement them. Do you think that, I mean, I personally believe that Mitt Romney is a genuine human being. He may be genuinely mistaken, but I think he means what he says. I don't think he he got up and spoke with tears in his eyes because of some phony belief, you know, just to embarrass himself and his family. I don't buy that. You know, do I, you know, so I suppose you and I, the question is posed from a, we're assuming, we're giving Senator Romney the benefit of the doubt here, right?
Yeah.
If that makes sense?
No, I think...
Do you think he grasps this from a policy perspective? Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but precast, you indicated to me that you felt that he sees that he does have another run in him. I would assume in 2024, it's like, well, it's now or never. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, I mean, do you think it translates?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that the GOP, and I don't think America broadly, is ready for another Donald Trump.
We'll never pass this way again.
And, well, knock on wood for you.
Well, okay, get real. Kanye West has no electoral future.
We'll see. He's probably going to drop a new album. You know, it's really hard to predict Romney 2024, but I do believe that's what he's gunning for, and I think he's reading the room. And if he continues to read the room, he could be a power candidate. I believe that.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I feel like that's perhaps a good dun-dun-dun to DC moment for our next episode. And I do, man-to-man, apologize to you again for kind of derailing what you and I kind of went into this with.
No derailment apology necessary. This is what we do. We enjoy doing it, and I think...
I feel like this was one of our finest hours.
It was a good episode. I appreciate it. So,
well, I mean, you took some... it wasn't entirely unforeseen. I mean, you and I have talked about these things, but I don't know. It was,
you know what,
it was more of a stream of consciousness, I suppose, that series of questions from my part, because you and I have talked about this in private and wanted to have that civil rights conversation more from a political standpoint, not whether or not it's right or wrong. I mean, you're a Bobby Kennedy progressive thinker. I'm more of a Nixon Rockefeller GOP thinker, forced to take a label. Both of us are in favor of civil rights. So this is more of a pragmatic.
It's just,
hey, what does this look like?
It's a conversation that I think everyone should be having. And it's to ask the questions and not get up each other's ass about asking the questions. That's it. Like, I don't have all the answers. I know that I would get destroyed on a 5-minute segment where I had to make an argument, but I don't talk as fast as Ben Shapiro, and I don't have as big as words as Ben Shapiro.
You're also not spending uncanny amounts of time preparing either. I mean, for God's sake, by the time you graduate, I'm going to be back in my third or fourth final semester of economic study myself. You know, after what having to de-enroll again, you know, from externalities, shall Indeed. We say. So,
that's,
I mean,
a good way to...
we're always in this spot. So, I mean, I suppose that's what's brought a very visceral element to this, is that, well, it's two guys with perhaps greater than average understanding of the system with lesser than desired preparation time, trying to advance the ball forward. Is that fair?
I think that's very fair. So,
so fair.
As always, we've actually pushed this about 20 minutes longer than we normally do, and I appreciate that. So, it's always home from work, prepare for the podcast episode, say hello to the family, walk the dogs, do the podcast episode, and then dive back into capital budgeting and equity valuation. So that's what I like to look forward to.
You know, don't forget to carry the four. And what about the cats? I mean, the cat's where it's at.
No, man. That's all right. That's
yeah, next time.
So as always, my friend, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you week in and week out. So until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.